You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to N2K CyberWire's Hacking Humans podcast, where each week we look behind the social engineering scams, phishing schemes, and criminal exploits that are making headlines and taking a heavy toll on organizations all over the world. I'm Dave Bittner, and joining me is Joe Kerrigan from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
We got some good stories to share this week, and once again, we are joined by our N2K colleague and host of the T-Minus Space Daily podcast, Maria Vermasis. Maria.
Hi, I'm back. I'm here.
We are excited to have you back. And we will be right back after this message from our show sponsor. But first, a word from our sponsors at KnowBefore. We're not talking conspiracy theory when we say it's all connected. When it comes to InfoSec tools, effective integrations can make or break your security stack. Though not as common, the same should be true for security awareness training. Not only does KnowBefore deliver the world's largest library of security awareness training, but they also provide a way to integrate the various elements of your existing security stack to help you strengthen your organization's security culture. Stay with us, and in a few minutes, we'll hear from our sponsors at KnowBefore about how you can integrate security awareness with your tech stack like never before. All right, Joe and Maria, before we jump into our stories this week, we have a bit of follow-up here. Joe, you want to take us through what we got?
Yes, Dave. Raul wrote in. He said, "Hi, Dave and Joe and Maria. Absolutely love, live, and breathe the show. I love it when listeners love, live, and breathe the show."
Okay.
It's my favorite. "I witnessed the infamous Facebook post of the fake car crash." Dave, you were talking about this a couple months ago.
Still making the rounds.
Apparently.
Yeah, I've seen it recently. Yep.
Yeah.
"With the person's account saying, 'I can't believe he's gone. I'm going to miss him so much.'
Yeah.
I did not click on the link, but I did report this post as a scam, or as spam rather."
Yep.
"Facebook instantly closed the report and did nothing with it."
Yep.
So, and Raul sent along screen caps of the report that he sent, and it said right underneath of it, "closed."
Yeah. I mean, there are several versions of this, and I think one of the things is that there is no perfect category to list this under when you report it to Facebook, and I think that's intentional.
Oh.
Yeah, because they certainly wouldn't list clickbait as a category, would they?
No. I mean, you could say misinformation, but it really doesn't. Yeah. So I stopped reporting this because something clicked in my head where I thought, oh, wait a minute. If I keep reporting this, is Facebook going to consider this to be engagement and give me more of them?
Right.
So every time it comes up for me now, I just click and say, please show me less of this. Please show me less of this.
Right.
Interesting.
That works.
You're gaming the algorithm. That's smart.
Well, I'm trying. The problem is the algorithm is so freaking aggressive. You know, it's like, oh, wait a minute, you stopped and looked at sunglasses for 5 seconds. So for the next week, it's going to be all sunglasses all the time. Oh, great. Thanks. That's really useful.
Dave, I love hearing about how happy you are that you came back to Facebook.
You can hear it. It's just dripping from his voice.
Yeah.
It's just,
oh, yeah. Right? It's been time well spent. Absolutely. All right. What else we got, Joe?
We got one from, it's a follow-up on the episode 286. It says, "Dave and Joe, hello. Last summer, I was in London for a conference. I got harassed." This is talking about the con woman at the Piccadilly Circus or Piccadilly Station in London.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's an underground station or if it's like just a train station. I have no idea.
Okay.
"I got harassed / scammed at Piccadilly Station as well. Being alone and nonchalant, I guess I was quite approachable. A lady walked up to me and started giving me a story about herself being an immigrant and not having enough money to make it to the next station. She, too, asked me if I could buy her tickets, showing me an app. Although it did not have any money in it, she promised that she could have money.
Hmm.
I tried to decline, but she was pushy about it and followed me. Eventually, I gave in, walked over to walked over and bought her physical tickets at a machine for about £20.
Hmm.
I recall her not being quite happy, but not entirely disappointed. I figured if she was having a tough time getting money, then I could help her. And maybe if she was also if she was scamming me, the guilt of someone being genuinely kind without expecting money back would make her change her ways.
That's adorable, Alec.
Right. Alec, that is not what's happening. If you're being scammed, no. These people, maybe it's a bit poor of me to think that way. I don't think so, Alec. Anyways, forgot about this story until the other listeners shared their Piccadilly story. Thanks for the podcast and many happy years ahead.
I don't mean to give Alec a hard time because, as I've said many times on here, that I too am a soft touch for scammers. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt. And my attitude is I would rather go through life losing some money every now and then brutally assuming that everybody is out to scam me.
Yeah.
Oh. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you buy a ticket for £20 or $20, then you're out $20, right?
Yeah.
Not a big loss. You know what your loss is going in. Maybe you're helping somebody and you can think that.
Right. I feel like I should mention here for people who don't know about Piccadilly, that's like the Times Square of London. So there are a lot of scammers walking around that area. So just for anyone who's like visiting London on business and doesn't know this, like that is a hotbed of a lot of not so great activity. So they're on the lookout for for people.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you walk in there with a straw hat and piece of grass sticking out of your mouth.
Look, right, it's a yank.
Your denim overalls.
Right.
Right. With a printed map in your hand, right. Looking around wide-eyed.
Where can I find a Big Mac around here?
Right. I've never been to Piccadilly Circle, but I think my most vivid... the image that pops up in my mind is the final scene in American Werewolf in London.
Oh.
Wow.
I don't remember the final scene.
Yeah.
But I go to a different movie. I go to Wayne's World.
Oh.
Man, these references.
They had a couple of obvious body doubles standing on Piccadilly Circus, on the circle, going, wow, Wayne, we're at Piccadilly Circle. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, hopefully someday I'll get there, but so far I've never had the pleasure. All right, we got one more bit of follow-up here,
yes.
Joe. What do we got?
Paula said that we mentioned people being on their phones after a flight gets canceled.
Mm.
And Paula makes the astute observation that some of these people probably have concierge services with their employers that they're required to go through.
Mm.
So that's why they get on their phones and call the concierge service. They don't have to wait in line. They get it done immediately.
Right.
Very nice.
That's living.
That is. I used to work for a company that had this kind of thing.
Okay.
But I never had to use it. I never had to use it. I missed a plane once, but it was prior to that. Mm-hmm. But I never had a problem with it.
I have been around folks who have this sort of thing or organizations where this is, I guess, a perk of being at the executive level. I've never been at that level.
No.
So.
Yeah.
Me either.
That's funny because the places I've worked, us lower folks had to use the... booking service, and it was the executives that could book direct.
So, oh, isn't that interesting? Okay.
Maybe things have changed a little bit, but us lower rung folks were the ones that had to go through the travel agency.
All right. Well, it could be that my perception is completely upside down.
When we booked through the agency, all of our expense reporting got done automatically, which was nice.
That is nice.
I didn't have to fill out an expense report for every trip I went on, mm-hmm. They were numerous at one point.
Yeah. All right. Well, our thanks to Raul, Alec, and Paula for sending in these kind notes. We do appreciate it. And of course, we would love to hear from you. You can email us. It's hackinghumans@n2k.com. All right. Let's jump into our stories here. And Maria, as our special guest, you want to kick things off for us?
Oh, my goodness. My pleasure. Okay. So rhetorical, real question for you both. Not rhetorical, an actual question for you both. Do you use or have you heard people sort of shorthanding a service that one can call when one is having trouble with one's computer or electronic devices at home?
Geek Squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Geek Squad.
It's ubiquitous.
Geek Squad or...
Right.
Right. Or right. Joe and Dave's lifetime technical support.
That's just for our parents.
I was going to say, like, right. In my family, it's called Maria. That's yeah. But
right.
Yeah. Maria is the Greek, squad, geek squad in my family, but that's.
But I would say Greek squad. Oh, that's great.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Please tip your waiters. Try the veal. I would say, in my mind, geek squad is the Vaseline, the Q-tip, the you know, the generic name for this sort of thing, the big right. corporate provider of this sort of thing.
It is the phrase that I hear a lot that people just use as that short, exactly, that shorthand for, I need technical help of some kind of house call. So
right.
I guess it's good job Best Buy on getting that branding out there like that. That was the term in mind for one gentleman, Charles Gibbs of Ontario, Canada. He thought he was getting Geek Squad help when he had a printer. It's always a printer, isn't it? That was being very troublesome at home. Damn printers.
Printers are the worst.
They are the worst.
They are the absolute worst.
They are actually the worst ever. So my sympathies, Mr. Gibbs. So he did what a lot of people in this situation would do. He didn't have a Maria to call on for IT support. So he just Googled Best Buy and Geek Squad. Why not? And the first result he got in his search results, again, this was a Google search, was a very legitimate looking website, official logo, the location lookup service was working, and it pointed him correctly to his nearby Best Buy that he knew was his. And it confirmed that store was real, and it even gave him a phone number to call. So there was nothing alerting him that this was a scammy website or something that he shouldn't trust. It looked completely legitimate. So on that cursory glance, he called the number that he saw on that website. And I'm sure many of our listeners and you too know exactly what happened next. What unfolded was very familiar. Mr. Gibbs, thank you for calling Geek Squad. Oh, looks like there's a $349 refund balance on your account that's just sitting there. Don't you want this money? We'll happily get it to you if you just let us know your banking info. We can just have that sent direct deposit, so it's no trouble for you whatsoever. You know, you've got enough to deal with. Here you go. Oh, and oh, oops. Oh, no, we sent you $10,000 instead. Silly us. That happens all the time.
Right. That's when I hang up.
That is wise. I'm not surprised that you knew that.
Go out and spend $10,000.
Go and do something
that's
useful with
really
that money.
There.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Listeners know this is a common script. I've covered it. Y'all have covered it. Everybody knows. But yeah, so the scammers sent Mr. Gibbs on little errands between the bank and a Bitcoin ATM to supposedly return that excess money to a Best Buy. And after all was said and done, that supposed $349 refund that was due to Mr. Gibbs ended up costing him $25,000 Canadian, which is like $18,000 US, which is a lot. So because of his experience, Mr. Gibbs actually went to CTV and told his story to let others know about his experience. So good job.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Gibbs.
Yes, and to hopefully that other people will learn from it, especially other seniors like himself. And he said this quote, when they said I needed to pay even more money for currency conversion, I figured that that was enough and I didn't give them any more. While it was happening, it was almost like I was in a trance. And I kept thinking it was me that called Best Buy and Geek Squad, and they are reputable companies, which is a very interesting quote. I think that's a very relevant quote here. In your expert opinions, to me, this sounds like SEO poisoning, a classic technique. So bad guys gaming the search engines to make sure their scammy websites rank higher than the legitimate ones. Not a new
or
thing.
Was it an ad that he clicked on?
We don't see. That's the thing I was trying to figure out. Was it a sponsored? Was it an ad or was it just at the top of the search results? I don't know because that wasn't in the article. I would be very interested to learn that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would think these days, anything you Google search, an ad is going to be at the top of the search results. And since Google is doing such an awful job these days of differentiating between the ads and the actual content.
To say the least, yeah.
Yeah, I will cynically put some of this on them.
I think you're right on. I actually tried to replicate this, and I got a legitimate-looking website that was like an off-brand Geek Squad in my area. That it didn't look like the Best Buy website, but it looked close enough. No, I just thought that was just amazing. It wasn't the same service, I'm sure, that Mr. Gibbs found, but it was something else in my area trying to do the same exact thing. I have no idea if it's legit or not, or if it's just counterfeit. But either way, it's just amazing how...
Somebody's selling fake Geek Squad franchises.
Yeah,
now,
it was called,
right?
like Geek's right. Friends or something. I was like, what is that? Right. Yeah, it was really, really...
The Geek's Friends.
It sounded like a dating website, honestly. I wasn't, but it... Lonely Geeks.
There you go.
In your area. No. So yeah, it sounded like a pretty classic SEO poisoning attack. And the reminder for everyone, of course, is always be wary what you click, that search engines are not nearly as trustworthy as you used to be. And of course, Best Buy knows about this. Many companies like this, that their brands are getting hijacked, they know about this kind of thing. But as we've covered before, it's like whack-a-mole. You take one of these websites down, a bunch of them replace pretty quickly. So what can you do to protect yourself?
What can you do to protect yourself?
What can you do to protect yourself from getting fooled by attacks like this?
Vigilance. I mean, that's really the only thing.
Well, don't click through to a site, a big name site that you're trying to get at. Like, for example, if you want to go to Best Buy, type in bestbuy.com. Don't click on the link after a Google search for Best Buy.
I think that's valid. And I think that is the advice. And I'm going to just be a little annoying. If you are not the most technically savvy person, and maybe you've got a lot of advice bouncing around your head about how scary the internet is, I'm just remembering when whitehouse.com was a website you really did not want to go to.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it just sometimes people get really freaked out. Like, I don't know which one's the right one. Maybe I'll Google search it to figure out which one I should use. And then you get this poisoned SEO result.
I think it's an excellent point. I mean, a good dear friend of mine pointed out to me that his sister believes that the Google homepage is the front door to the internet. Like, so in other words, when she brings up a browser, it defaults to
Google,
which is, I think, is really, really common. And to her, that's where you begin. You don't put the name of where you're going up in the URL bar. You put it into Google, and then Google takes you there.
Right.
So I think that's a pretty common reality for a lot of folks who are just who aren't sophisticated tech folks.
Right.
And nerds like us. You can say it.
Exactly.
Nerds like us. Thank
it
you.
It makes sense, and it works. It works as a model.
Yeah.
Right. I used to think that way about Yahoo, and, not knowing that it was not the front page, but whenever I loaded this was way back.
I remember it though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Before Google existed, Yahoo would be my front end page, and I'd be like, well, let's see what's out there and look at it. And that, when I opened a web browser, it came up to Yahoo, and that's how I thought about it.
Right.
Now it comes up to the default unloaded page. That's what I do every single time. And I do that partially to remind me that this is not just some search that I can go and, or just some search engine.
Yeah.
Of course, my main browser is Chrome. So
and
it has the big
sort of the same thing.
Search interface right in front of it.
Yeah. And I'm curious, I mean, I'm not sure if he was on a desktop or if he was on his phone. And I feel like if you're on your phone, it adds a whole other level of difficulty there too.
Yeah, there is a big real estate problem on phones.
Yeah, so I know the advice is, as you said, go directly to the website, but then we've also kind of a little bit freaked people out about that too, so I rocking a hard place on that one for sure. But Joe, you nailed it with the never give out your bank info, just disconnect the phone right there. That is always the reddest of red flags.
I was trying to say that I would hang up as soon as they put the $10,000 into my account, but the truth of the matter is, they never put $10,000 into this guy's account. They're just not going to risk that. And if the guy is online with them, what they're doing is they're manipulating a web page that he's watching while it's going on. Mm-hmm. It's a social engineering attack. But the way to handle this is when somebody says, hey, we have a balance here that we need to transfer you. Give me your bank account. Just say, just write me a check.
Mm-hmm.
Write me a check and mail it to me.
Right.
I don't need that money right now. It's fine. But, then again, maybe
you do.
Maybe you do need that money right now.
Yeah.
Well, chances are this is a scam and there is no money. And that you're only going to wind up in greater need of money at this point in time. So, yeah, tell them write you a check.
Until the check bounces. Okay, no, I'll stop.
Yeah, the check. Right, the check will never show up.
I guess... The problem I have with write me a check is that even at that level, it's engagement.
Right.
And they've hooked you in some way.
Well, what's your address?
Yeah, right. Now they've got your address. Right. Yeah.
So now they send you a check and there's a problem with the check, but the check has a tech support call number on it. Oh, we forgot to sign the check? Hey, no problem. Tell you what.
Or couldn't it just become a check cashing scam where they send you a check for too much money? right? Mm-hmm. That, and then it could be, again, the right. same thing all over again. Oh, we sent you a $10,000 right. check instead of $349. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just drop that right in the shredder then.
Just hang up.
I'm sitting here fantasizing about how to deal with these guys, and you've got the right answer, Maria. Terminate the call.
But poor Mr. Gibbs' printer's still not working. Who's going to fix right. his printer?
Exactly.
Nobody's going to fix his printer. Printers don't work. Just yeah. accept it.
Throw it out the window. Yeah.
Right. Go buy another one.
Yeah.
I got so frustrated one time with a printer that didn't work. I just went out and bought another one.
You didn't just office space it?
Great. Yeah. I'm going to office space. We've office spaced a few things in my house. There was a bundt pan that would tear my wife's cakes apart, and that got office space.
You office spaced a bundt pan? Okay.
My kids did. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
They did. Were there explosives involved or just hammers?
Just baseball bats and okay. Sure. and some Ghetto Boys music in the background. Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow.
That was it.
Wow.
Absolutely.
They made a vine of it. That's how long ago
oh.
it was.
Oh, jeez. <That's> funny. Rip.
Wow. All right. You know, I'm actually friends with the person who shot that scene.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was shot way after the movie was wrapped also. Like, the movie was shot in California and that scene was shot in New Jersey or something like that. I forget what the actual lore is, but yeah.
That's a great movie, though, by the way.
Yeah.
The movie is Office Space. If you haven't seen it, it's a Mike Judge movie.
Great
and
scene.
That
anyway.
Scene is...
The whole movie is great, in my opinion. I think it's just... I love Mike Judge and just about everything he does.
Yeah. All right. Well, Maria, good advice. And of course, we will have a link to that story in the show notes. Joe, what do you have for us?
I have two things, Dave and Maria, but the first one's really quick. Dave, you remember way back in episode 272?
Sure.
Yeah. In January, there was a listener named Michael who wrote in about getting scam texts for toll roads.
Yes.
Well, the FBI has, through the Internet Crime Complaint Center, has released a public service announcement, and we could put a link to this in the show notes. It says, smishing scam regarding debt for toll road services.
Hmm.
So apparently this is a common thing. They're calling it a new scam since early March of 2024. However, Dave, we've been talking about it since January of 2024.
Right. Go on.
So it's they've received over 2,000 complaints about these smishing texts that say, the recipient owes money for unpaid tolls and contains almost identical language with the outstanding amount. So just take a look at this advisory. Understand that if you get these texts, they're just scams to try to get you to pay the $12 before the mythical $50 bill approaches.
Right. The mystery that I think is still out there when it comes to this, that I did not see addressed in the information from the FBI, was the part that Michael shared with us about
right.
how the text message would come moments after they were on a toll road.
Yeah.
Like it seemed to be somehow geofenced. Right. That was the mysterious part to me.
Yeah. Still mysterious.
Mm-hmm. Because I can understand just a generic, you know, spray and pray, send everybody we can, a thing that says you have a balance on a toll. Right. That, to me, that's run-of-the-mill just out there trying to collect what we can, you know, a scenario. Right.
right.
But the part that Michael shared where it was seemed to be somehow geofenced to actually being on a toll road, that is still intriguing to me.
That is interesting. That's quite the wrinkle to that story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow.
What else you got, Joe?
So I have a story that has kind of been in the news, developer news, and I'm going to talk about software development. So buckle up, everybody.
All right.
Oh, goody.
Okay, let's do it.
There's a utility that's included with a lot of Linux distributions called XZ Utilities.
What's a Linux? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Right.
I'm kidding.
Suffice
it to
say.
Is that like a Unix?
Yes, very much so.
Is that how I get on internet? Is this the year of the Linux on desktop? Sorry. Okay, I'll stop.
Let's hope. No, that'll never happen. So anyway, these utilities were developed by one guy, essentially, as is the case with a lot of these open source projects. And he was developing them in his own spare time. And on his on one story I read about this, he was saying that he was saying he's getting kind of worn down, getting kind of exhausted. And somebody said, "Hey, I'm happy to help take over this project and help you work on it." And his name is Jia Tan, and he positioned himself as a, or actually, this report says they position themselves, because they believe this is actually a group of people from a nation state. They position themselves to be able to put a back door into this into these libraries, these XZ libraries. And these XZ libraries have to do with file compression. So there are Linux distributions that use these file compression libraries. And there was not widespread distribution of the back door because it was detected before it could be widely distributed. Mm-hmm. But it was there, and it was heavily obfuscated, which means it was hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is an organization called the Open Source Security Foundation, which is they work on the security of open source software. And there's a company called another organization, OpenJS, who is the Open JavaScript Foundation. They're issuing a security alert for all open source projects to watch out for social engineering takeovers of their projects. So apparently someone is really targeting open source projects, because if you can get into an open source project and put a backdoor into it successfully and undetected, chances are, over time, that project is going to be distributed with so much other software. If you think about the Log4j vulnerability, I don't know if that was deliberate or not. I don't think it was. I think it was just a bug. But Log4j is so ubiquitous that I remember using it back in the early or late 2000s. And it's been just around for that long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a library that everybody has in just about every Java project that they produce. So there are some suspicious social engineering patterns to look for that the OSSF and OpenJS people say you should look for. One, friendly yet aggressive and persistent pursuit of the maintainer by a relatively unknown member of the community. So a new person comes up and says, hey, I need to be part of this system. You need to put me in charge. You need to give me a position of authority. I'm going to do the best job on this thing. Maybe that is a guy that is working for somebody who wants to put a backdoor into your software. Requests to be elevated to maintainer status by new or unknown persons. Endorsement coming from other unknown members of the community who may also be using false identities. And they have a term for this. It's called sock puppets. Which I love that term. Then it says pull requests containing blobs as artifacts. So this is where I have to get into developer stuff. So a pull request is something you do on Git and GitHub, where somebody has cloned your repository and they've made the change and they've uploaded it to their repository and they issue a pull request for you to pull their changes into your repository. And if they have blobs, which are binary large objects in their code as artifacts, chances are that could be the back door masquerading as something like a test, as it was in the case of those compression utilities.
It's basically bits of code. We don't know quite what it does, and we're not sure it should be there. And
right. Yeah. And it's not in source code, so you can't just read it. You actually have to reverse engineer it. Right. You have to do the reverse engineering on it, which is not a task that every single developer can do. That there are some security researchers are really good at it. That's what they do. Vulnerability researchers or malware researchers in particular, they go after it and they're good at doing it. But most developers I've met have been very good at writing the code into the machine code, but not great at getting it back out. Just because that's not where they spend their time.
It's just not what they do. It's a different area. It's a different thing.
Right, yep. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Intentionally obfuscated or difficult to understand source code. So if you get source code that is not plain and not clear, that should be a red flag anyway. That may be bad development, you know? It may be a developer that's not that skilled.
Could they be using AI?
Right. All the AI code that I've tried to generate recently has all been pretty clear and pretty concise.
For now. Oh, sorry, I'm just being conspiracy-minded. Right.
Yeah. once they wake up.
Maybe that's a red flag.
Once
the code
AI
is too clean.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Gradually escalating security issues. Let's see, a deviation from the typical project compile. So this is, again, if you start using different chains, different compiler chains, you start including blobs and zips and other binary artifacts into your builds. If you're not a software engineer, none of this matters to you, so you don't need to worry about it. But the final point here is a false sense of urgency, especially if the implied urgency focuses on focuses a maintainer to reduce the thoroughness or review of bypass or review of a bypass control. So this is the typical asks to deviate from the standard process, which we see in a lot of social engineering attacks just applied to a software engineering background or project.
What was the timeline for Geotan? Like, how long were they working this? Was it years,
about
months?
2 years, wasn't it? Yeah, it was about 2 years.
It was 2 years, yeah. I think. It was the accounts that were involved in that in the library compromise were old accounts by the time the vulnerability happened, but they were. I'll tell you another story. Losing track of things. A friend of mine had someone convince him to download malware onto his computer that turned out to be an info stealer. And the way they did that was by compromising the Discord account of another person on a development project he was working on that was kind of like, wasn't an open source project, but it was a collaborative free project with a bunch of different people on it. And one guy got compromised and tried to spread to my friend's account. And my friend was fortunate that he acted quickly enough to be able to get the passwords changed in all of his accounts before the guy had any access to it. But he was immediately asking for money to give him back access. But I think these attacks are nation state sponsored, and they're going after these open source projects because they know that these open source projects are widely distributed throughout the world.
Yeah, and if they're investing years into developing, I mean, they know the payoff is huge. They're not trying to rush this. I mean, I know the development cycles are not super duper fast, but still 2 years is a decent amount of time.
Yeah, my concern is that what we're seeing here is just the tip of the iceberg, and that the one capture on the library and the other couple of things in this article that it talks about are just the ones that they happen to have been successful at stopping. There may be some out there that have not been successfully stopped. And now there are open source libraries that are in distribution that have backdoors in them.
Well, and this one was found pretty much by accident, right? Somebody was looking, had noticed that there was this library had taken a speed hit. Someone was measuring how quickly it functioned, and they noticed a difference that for some reason it was burning up a lot of, you know, processor time that it shouldn't have. And so that's what got this person curious, and they started reverse engineering it, and that's how it was found.
It was a Microsoft researcher, if I recall.
It was, yeah. And so it was just, you know, someone had a very specific interest in something that this did and was curious enough and obsessive enough to figure out or to want to dig in as to why something that should have taken a certain amount of time took a little bit more time than it should have. And so I think a lot of folks feel like they dodged a bullet with this one because it would have been very likely that it wouldn't have been noticed.
That's one of the metaphors that's used in one of these articles I read about this. And I can't remember if it was this article or another one, but I read like six articles on this. But they said, you should not be feeling happy that you've dodged a bullet here because you only know about the bullet you dodged.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I think the good news, if there is any, is that this is making a lot of folks who are working on open source projects take a fresh look at how their security is handled, how this social engineering side of it that I think a lot of folks who are technically minded and working in technical industries tend to underemphasize the degree to which pure social engineering play could work on them.
Yes, right. Yes, yep. Yeah, and there's a lot of social trust that goes into these kinds of projects too. So
there is.
You have to trust your collaborators on these kinds of things to some degree. I mean, but yeah, it's definitely worth making sure there's some kind of process in place or some protocol. I would hope there would be more, but if you don't have any, it's time to get some together for sure.
Yeah. Well, and there are countless projects like this that are just some really, you know, it's that, what is it, the XCS comic?
XKCD,
yes.
It's exactly what I was thinking about with this whole. There's always an XKCD comic for anything, it's true.
Right. There's, you know, one little piece is holding up this whole big structure, And that one little piece is that tired little developer who's single-handedly keeping track of some little open source component that everything else is built on, but nobody knows.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing here for the average person to do. This is definitely on open source maintainers to, yeah.
But my point here is that this is the same techniques that the average person sees. The artificial time horizon, the pressure, the hey, buddy, hey, pal, let me help you out, those kind of things.
Right, right. All right, well, we will have a link to those stories in the show notes. Before we get to my story, we're going to take a quick break to hear this message from our sponsor. Back to the concept of integrations. KnowBe4's Security Coach uses standard APIs to quickly and easily integrate with your existing security products from vendors like Microsoft, CrowdStrike, Cisco, and dozens of others. Security Coach analyzes alerts your security stack generates to identify events related to any risky security behavior from your users. With this information, you can set up real-time coaching campaigns to target risky users based on those events from your network, endpoint, identity, or web security vendors. These campaigns enable you to coach your users at the moment the risky behavior occurs, with contextual security tips delivered via Microsoft Teams, Slack, or email. With 35 integrations and counting, Security Coach delivers the insight you need to improve your organization's security culture. Learn more about Security Coach at knowbe4.com/securitycoach. That's knowbe4.com/securitycoach. All right, we are back, and I am going to go out on a limb at the outset and say that my story is a doozy.
A doozy.
Love doozies. Doozy. Let's do it.
So, Joe, this has some local appeal to you and I. This actually took place nearby at Pikesville High School, and I have to say Pikesville is not too far from us. In fact,
it is not.
My in-laws live in Pikesville.
I used to work in Pikesville.
Is that right?
Where is Pikesville?
It's a suburb of Baltimore. It's near Towson.
It's about due west of Baltimore.
Yeah, it's a lovely community and probably, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes from us, depending on traffic.
Right. In Maryland.
It is in Maryland.
Maryland is...
Yes. The land of Queen Mary. So the principal of Pikesville High School, whose name is Eric Eiswirth, found himself at the center of some controversy when an audio recording of him saying some terrible things started making the rounds among the school community.
I remember the news stories about this.
He was making racist and anti-Semitic comments.
Right.
And as you can imagine, this audio file would spread like wildfire.
Yes.
And it did.
It was all over social media.
Yes.
And I remember people were trying this guy in the social media court and getting ready to burn him in effigy.
Right. He was pulled from his job, given... what do they call it when they
suspended with pay?
There you go.
Administrative leave.
Administrative leave. That's the term I was looking for. Yeah. So he was pulled from his job, they had to put security at his house because folks were making threats over social media. It was just terrible. And imagine the school community. By all accounts, this was a respected and liked principal of the school, but leader of the school community. And suddenly, people felt betrayed by this audio file, by these allegations. To imagine that this person could have done this, people felt, I think, rightfully upset.
Right.
If this were true.
Right.
Well, turns out, which I think should be the name of half the podcasts that are out there, turns out that he did not do it.
Ah.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, there you go.
Right. Turns out that one of his coworkers, someone who is named Dajon Darian, who has been arrested and charged with using artificial intelligence to create a deepfake to impersonate the school principal.
Now, if I recall correctly, that is exactly what the principal said had happened when this initially took place.
Is that right?
Yes.
So Dajon Darian was the head of athletics at the school. And we can only imagine that, you know, must have had some kind of beef between him and the principal, and created this audio file, allegedly, and sent it around. Evidently was selective, you know, knew, like, we all know that person, right? If I send it to this person, it's going to make the rounds.
Yes.
He took his cues from high school bullies and was like, that seems like a great idea. I'm going to do that.
Right.
Wow. Amazing.
Right. Exactly.
Of course, it was the gym teacher. Sorry, but...
So, the school district got involved and the police got involved. And the Baltimore County Police, as they started to investigate, things just didn't add up. And they discovered that this gym teacher had been doing searches for AI tools using his computer that was on the school network.
Ah.
And they found a email account that was associated with this person that was one of the ones that was responsible for the initial distribution of the audio file.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He used a school account. Folks. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on that.
he used a computer
at school.
At the school.
He knows how much those things are monitored, right? I mean,
right? Maybe not.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I don't know that that's those specific details. It seems as though that is the case. You know, the specific details are a little sketchy here, or fuzzy anyway, in the reporting that I've seen on this. But evidently, there were enough breadcrumbs for the police to follow that they charged him. Yeah, he's charged with a number of things. Now, one of the things that they point out here is that there really aren't direct laws about this particular thing.
Yeah, what do you get charged with? Is it like wiretap fraud or something? What is the crime they can get you for?
So the charges that he faces include disrupting school activities, theft, retaliating against a witness, and stalking.
All right, now, I want to pause a minute. Disrupting school activities is a chargeable offense. Is that new? Because I hope that isn't. I hope that wasn't the case back in the 80s, Dave.
Well,
like, you know, bomb threats and stuff.
One thing I've come to kind of understand and believe is that there are all kinds of laws on the books.
Right.
And there are proactive laws and there are reactive laws, right? There are laws that you go out there and actively seek to enforce, and there are reactive laws which are on the books just in case you need them.
Right.
And I would probably put disrupting school activities as being one of those. And I don't know if it's a misdemeanor or a felony or who knows what. The theft is because when more scrutiny was put on this person, turns out that they, are alleged to have inappropriately distributed some school funds. So part of what's going on here.
So uncovering other actions that during the investigation.
Correct.
Okay.
But nothing actually about impersonating him.
No.
Wow.
No, because
there's no law for it.
I don't think it's illegal yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Dang.
Right.
Yep. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think as I read through this, what it really brought home to me was the community's rush to judgment.
Yeah.
Which is an understandable impulse, right? I mean, the accusation was of doing horrible things, saying horrible things.
I think when we talked about this, when it first happened, I may have brought that up. Like, I think that we owe this guy, I don't know, maybe I didn't, but I seem to remember thinking we owe this guy at least the benefit of the doubt here. You know, okay, put him on administrative leave until we sort this out. And if it comes out that he did it, we can dismiss him. If it comes out that he didn't do it, you know, no harm, no foul, right?
Yeah.
Except for the damage that's been done to the school community. You know, there's always going to be that lingering doubt. I mean, it's what any accusation does.
Yeah, and his reputation has taken a hit through no fault of his own. Yeah, Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if he has kids or not, but, you know, hey, daddy, why are there guards out front of our
right.
house?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that could come from this, but I think it's just a terrible example of, you know, somebody, this is the new reality that we're in here. This is easy to do.
Right.
Right. You have someone who is a public individual, so not hard to get a voice sample.
Right.
And you can spin something like this up effortlessly for free. And that's what this person did.
Huh.
Yeah. Benefit of the doubt is not a very stylish thing right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's not. That,
as much as we need it more than ever, it's not really a thing anymore, it seems. So, boy.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, the other side of this, to be fair, is that folks who did do horrible things or say horrible things, one of the ways that they'll try to deny it will say, oh, well, obviously, that's a deep fake.
Yeah.
I never said that.
Oh,
you know, that, I mean, you can do that for free and it's easy. And
yep.
I'm a public official. Of course, someone did this to me.
Isn't life
so
grand?
That's where we are.
Yeah, that's great. Life, right. Great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how we work this out. I don't know how we sort this out. It's going to lead to hopefully more skepticism, I guess. But, you know, who do you believe? At some point, you have to believe people. You have to trust people. And this is yet another injection of uncertainty in our ability to trust each other. And
yeah.
It's troubling.
It is.
Yeah.
Hooray.
All right. Well, that is my story for this week. We will have a link to that in the show notes. And of course, if there's something you'd like us to consider for the show, please email us. It's hackinghumans@n2k.com. Joe, the catch of the day has the week off this week.
All right.
It is intimidated by Maria, so it'll be back next time.
I've been told.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's out fishing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It knew better. So the catch of the day will return next time. But until then, Maria, thank you so much for joining us. It is always a pleasure, and we are so happy to have you take the time to be with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always have a great time.
So if folks want to check out some of the other things that you're up to, what's the best way to do that?
Oh, please listen to T-Minus Space Daily anywhere fine podcasts are purveyed, and space.n2k.com is our website.
We want to thank all of you for listening, and of course, we want to thank our sponsors at KnowBefore. They are experts at enabling a fully integrated approach to security awareness training. Our thanks to the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute for their participation. You can learn more at isi.jhu.edu. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. Our executive producer is Jennifer Iben. This show is mixed by Trey Hester. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie. I'm Dave Bittner.
I'm Joe Kerrigan.
And I'm Maria Varmazes.
Thanks for listening.
Hey all, Rick here. At N2K CyberWire, we're dedicated to continuously improving the quality of the news and commentary on our network. That's why we're inviting you to participate in our 2024 audience survey. It only takes a few minutes and your feedback is invaluable. Plus, you'll have the chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card as a thank you for your time. Head on over to cyberwire.com/survey. That's cyberwire.com/survey to share your feedback now.